Okay, today we're doing Minchas Chinuch, mitzvah number 9, which is called Mitzvah Tashbisu, the mitzvah to get rid of chametz. I just said it in a different way, the mitzvah to be rid of chametz. And be careful because those are two different things. Okay, the Minchas Chinuch immediately gets into a question over whether the mitzvah is to get rid of chametz or to be rid of chametz. And in order to understand the difference between those two things, I hope everyone received the 3 pages that I sent out, right? So in order to get into understand those two different things, I want to introduce you to 2 different concepts, 2 different types of positive mitzvahs. Okay, one is a mitzvah chiyuvis, which is a mitzvah that we are obligated to perform on a daily basis, on regular intervals. We have to go out and do this mitzvah. The other one is called a mitzvah kiyumis. A mitzvah kiyumis means that you can go your whole life without actually doing this thing, without violating the Torah, without missing a mitzvah. An example of a mitzvah kiyumis would be putting up a mezuzah. Someone can go a whole lifetime without putting up a mezuzah, without violating the Torah. If you live in a cave, if you don't have a house, right? You live outdoors. Ostensibly, there's no violation of the Torah to live outdoors. Okay, So putting up a mezuzah is a mitzvah kiyumis. In other words, if you live in a place with a doorpost, 2 doorposts and a lintel at the top, so now you have to put up a mezuzah there. But that's only if that's what you end up doing. Okay, so there are what I'd like to do is use a tshuva of the Shagis Aryeh, and then a comment of Rav Adya Yosef in order to underscore the difference between these two mitzvahs. Okay, and then I'll give one other example between Rav Adya Yosef and Rav Moshe Feinstein, a particular example. Okay, so the Shagis Aryeh discusses why we put on the tallis before the tefillin in the morning. So most people would say the reason why we put on tallis is because tallis is worn more often, right? And there's a klal in the Gemara in the 8th perek in Maseches Vachim, Todir v'sheinu Todir, Todir Kodim. The perek is called Kol HaTodir, right? When you have 2 mitzvahs in front of you and one is done more often, you do the one that's done more often first. But then the Gemara throws in a monkey wrench and it says, what happens if one of the mitzvahs is more holy? One mitzvah is done more often, but the other mitzvah is holier. So the Gemara gives 7 different questions of this topic and tries to answer each one, but it does not draw a conclusion. And therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara is, if you have 2 mitzvahs, ostensibly, tallis and tefillin, where tallis is worn more often and tefillin is holier, you can choose whichever one you want. There's no compelling reason to put on one over the other. So the Shulchan Aruch and Simen Ches in Or HaChaim asks, so why do we always put on the tallis before the tefillin? So if you look up Simen Ches in Shulchan Aruch, he says something that seems to defy the Gemara I just mentioned. He says the reason why we put on tallis is because we go from a lower Kedusha to a higher Kedusha. That's what we state in the beginning of Simen Ches. So the Shagis Aryeh says that contradicts the Gemara in a number of ways. First of all, by the criteria of the Gemara, you should be able to choose whichever one you want first. Tallis is Tadir and Tefillin is holier. But furthermore, the Gemara insists that when you have 2 mitzvahs to do in front of you, and one is holier than the other, you should always put on the holier one first. Okay, unless the other one is done more often, in which case you can choose whichever one you want. But don't give a reason, Mr. Shulchan Aruch, that mamish flies in the face of the Gemara. If you want to put on tallis first because it's more tadir, then say so. But don't say you put on the talis first because you go from a lower kedusha to a higher kedusha. The Gemara said exactly the opposite of that. Everyone with me? So the Be'er Halacha, the Be'er Halacha is the like the Lumdisha notes of the Mishnah Brura in Or HaChaim. The Be'er Halacha thinks that the Shag Yisari misunderstood the Shulchan Aruch's reasoning. The Shag Yisari thought that it meant you go from a lower mitzvah to a higher mitzvah. No, says the Be'er Halacha. The body needs a lower mitzvah in order to prepare for the higher mitzvah. No Jewish person should wear tefillin ever unless you have a pair of tzitzis on first. You get it? Not necessarily the talis over your, you know, but the tzitzis under your shirt. So you should never put on tefillin if you don't have a tzitzis on first. You'll short circuit the body. You'll short circuit the body if you put on tefillin before the talis. You have to prepare the body with a lower kedusha. Not that the mitzvah is a lower kedusha going to a higher kedusha. Okay, fine.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Do the Lubavitch go by this because of the mitzvah tanks? They have everyone putting on the tefillin.
I guess they have a higher calling in mind. Okay. But you're essentially right. If the Be'er Halacha is correct, what the Lubavitchers should do is give them a little pair of tzitzis first to put on, and then the tefillin. My thoughts would be that people wouldn't do that. They're not going to put on a talis. But maybe they could put on a talis that we wear in shul, that kind of talis. You know, that maybe people would do. I'm thinking that if the Lubavitch in those tanks, the mitzvah tanks, are saying, listen, this person is going to do one mitzvah. If I have to choose, let me put tefillin on his arm. He's not going to put on talis and then tefillin. But maybe they should carry a talis just because Charlie thinks it's a good idea, and so do I. They should carry a talis in case the person wants to wear both.
That's an issue of tafasta meruba.
That's what I just got finished saying, yeah. Maybe Rabbi, that's what they're thinking.
Who was the
Shag Yisari? Shag Yisari was the Rav of Metz, M-E-T-Z,
Germany,
in the early 1800s. He was 70 when he arrived there, and there was a whole movement to say that he was too old. And there's a famous speech he gave about the beauty of old age, and he lived to be 90. He served in Metz for 20 years.
Wow.
And I think somewhere in his late 80s, he made his 1,000th Siyum HaShas. 1,000.
When did he write the Sefer? Earlier in his life, or when he
wasn't printed in his lifetime, but he's also the author of the Ture Evin. You familiar with it?
Yes, I've heard of the
Ture Evin, very, very commonly quoted by Rabbi Kiva Eger in the Gilyonei HaShas. Easily the most commonly quoted sefer. It's every few amudim in Shas. It just, by the way, in this next week. The Haraya. Look this next week in every Gilyonei HaShas. I don't learn Daf Gemara without the Gilyonei HaShas. Sometimes just 2, 3, 4 notes. It's little snippets from the Rabbi Kiva Eger. And I do believe this coming week there's a whole series of Ture Evans. There's usually little paragraphs, and they're really quite the learning.
So he lived. You said in the 1800s.
Yeah, I believe that he passed away in the mid-1800s.
And
his name was Rav Aryeh of Metz. His name is Aryeh.
Yes, okay. Makes sense.
I think Metz is in France, isn't it?
Germany.
I think it's Germany. Or maybe
I actually just looked it up. I thought it was France, and I just looked it up, and it says Metz is in France. So whatever.
Maybe the border. Is it like Strasbourg? Is that area?
It says it's in the Moselle department.
Yeah. That's like the sort of the area, you know, between France and Germany.
Northwest of Strasbourg and south of Luxembourg. Whatever. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. All right, so the Shag Yisari then says, okay, so if I think the Shulchan Aruch is wrong, so why do we put on talis first? So this is his answer. He says that whenever we have two mitzvahs in front of us, and the Gemara says do the Todir first, That's only when the two mitzvahs are equal. Talis and tefillin are not equal. Tell me why from my introduction. Because talis is a mitzvah kiyumis.
Right.
Tefillin is a mitzvah chiyuvis.
Right.
Only every post bar mitzvah male must wear tefillin every day. But right. You only have to wear a talis if that garment has four corners. Now, because we love that mitzvah so much, we put on an artificial four-cornered garment. But at the time of the Torah, to the time of the Gemara, men were naturally wearing four-cornered garments. Rabbeinu Tam in Menachos Daf Mem Aleph says, our women wear four-cornered garments and they put tzitzis on them.
Wow. The big talis that you know married men wear, or if you're a German Jew, you get it at your bar mitzvah. How does that fit into the picture?
So that is this is a its own lumdus. That's just to
like etus for tefillah or something, or
yeah. But, there's a Gemara in Sota that says that because Avraham said mechut bat shruchnal, so mechut is the chut shel tzitzis, shruchnal is the ritzua shel tefillin. So it's only in Avraham's tefillah and shacharis that we wear that the big talis and tefillin. Many people wore tefillin all day, these small pairs of tefillin, until they stopped. But tzitzis became common because it's easy to wear under the shirt. What I'm wearing, I happen to be wearing two pairs of tzitzis now because it was cold outside today. But the thing I'm wearing under my shirt, I would never wear if not for the mitzvah. No man is going
right, but the practice, and I guess it's a halacha that you put on the big talis. Certain men put on the big talis for davening. That's a different idea than the tzitzis.
Yes,
right?
Yes. So I tried to give you a hint for why only shachris? Why not mincha? Marav I get because you're not supposed to put it on at night. But why not mincha? Why not sit and learn in the afternoon and night in the afternoon seder? So that fits that Gemara. So that we take off, but we remain with the talis under our shirt, and the tefillin we take off because we can't maintain the necessary kedusha all day that we're supposed to have while wearing tefillin. All right. But do you see that tefillin you have to go out and put on every day? We have become so ingrained that tzitzis is Remember the Gemara in Menachos where someone named Katina never wore tzitzis. Mm-hmm. And then one day he needed God for something and an angel called out to him, Katina, where were you? Why weren't you wearing the tzitzis? Right? So I have an echo.
Yeah, somebody called in. Whoever called in, just called in himself.
The calling user.
Okay. I don't have to mute everybody. But... Okay. Perfect. Aaron, can you?
Yeah, I can hear good. Ah,
okay, good. All right, so the Shagisari says that because the two mitzvahs are not the same, the rules of Tadir Vashinu Tadir do not apply. And he uses the example of Hanukkah and Motzei Shabbos of Hanukkah. Do you remember that this past year we always have the same question people are always asking? In Shul, what we do first is we light the menorah and then we light Havdalah. And at home, we light Havdalah, and then we light the menorah. Why? What's the Daf Kamina? All the calendars just say that without explaining what's going on. Why are we changing? So the short answer is that at home, the rules of Tadir Vashenu Tadir do apply. In Shul, they don't. The reason is because in Shul, on Saturday night, the lighting of the menorah and Havdalah are not the same mitzvah. At home, they are the same mitzvah. Okay, this is the explanation that Rav Adi Yosef gives in the Tshuva in Yechaved Das using the Shagis Aryeh. That at home, lighting the menorah and lighting Havdalah are both exactly the same mitzvah. They're mitzvos midrabanan. Same mitzvah. So, but some drabanan said we can say Asher Kedishanu mitzvah Sovitzivon, Lahabit Ner Shel Chanukah. We say, we know that the Rabbanan makes takanas for us to make brachas. So at home, it's exactly the same bracha, so the same mitzvah. So at home, Tadir Vishenu Tadir kicks in, which is light the Havdalah first.
But in it's not because you kind of want to end Shabbos before you light the Hanukkah candles? That's got nothing to do with it?
If that were the case, then we'd make Havdalah and Shul first.
Right. Well, that's okay. But I mean, at home... Whatever. Okay. So it's got nothing to, really. I thought that was part of it. And that's why on Friday you do it the other way around. That's why you light
in Shmon Esrei, Shabbos is over. You don't need to make Havdalah to light the menorah. You need to.
Okay. You don't need to, but it seems like it would be better to. Okay. All right. Whatever. Okay.
The Havdalah that you make it home or in the coast is a heter achila.
Right.
Head to Malacha comes from what you say, Shmon Esrei.
Right.
And even if you forgot.
But didn't I just see somewhere that some people are makpid to make Havdalah before they do any Malacha or something like that? No? Is that not. Did I wrong thing or something? I thought.
It might be a good thing to do this. You don't push off making Havdalah, but I don't know. Once you, and even if you forgot to say Atachon Antonu with Shmon Esrei, and you have to open up a light someplace, just say the words. Right? So you have to say something. Okay, but in Shul, the two mitzvahs are not the same because in Shul, the mitzvah of menorah serves no purpose whatsoever halachically to fulfill anyone's obligation. The only person whose obligation would be fulfilled by lighting the menorah in Shul would be the people at the end of Pesachim that the Gemara says a Shul should always have, hence we make Kiddush on Friday night, is that you should always have guests sleeping over in Shul. There should always be a guest house in every shul. Now, it might be impractical in some ways, but there should always be a guest house. Those guests would fulfill their obligation with that menorah, because that's their home. And they do fulfill their obligation for that kiddush. So I know there's some, I remember there was a Rosh Yeshiva, Rav Ilson, Joel's Rebbe. He was always very much against the places where they stopped making kiddush on Friday night, which is very common in Israel, but they still light the menorah in shul. If you light the menorah in shul, you should be making kiddush on Friday night in shul. And if you're not going to make kiddush Friday night, then don't light the menorah. Right? Okay? So it's really the exact same mitzvah. But again, since in shul, menorah and havdalah are not the same mitzvah. Havdalah remains a drabanan wherever you say it. But the menorah in shul, absent any guests, is just lezecher. It's like a lezecher something. Right? So therefore, since they're two different mitzvahs, the din of tadir v'shino tadir is not compelling. So what makes us light the menorah first in shul is that's what you would say. That it's sort of the flip side of what you said before, Walter, is I want to make Havdalah the very last thing I do in shul on Saturday night.
Wow. That does sound like that's the opposite, right? Counterintuitive, I would say.
In other words, if the Taz says it like this, let Shabbos remain longer and longer. What are you talking about? The Sunni cash Shabbos has to be over the light of the menorah.
Right, exactly.
That doesn't really follow
logically.
Let the Jews not rush to make Havdalah. Let Havdalah be the last thing you make.
Right? But once you're doing other malacha, what's the point of...
I know. And it may also be that if you made Havdalah first, people would just leave. They wouldn't stick around.
That's what I would have kind of thought more so, right?
They won't say Moz Tzur and they won't have Pursumim and the Shul.
Right, if people want to hear Havdalah.
Havdalah is saving them from wine and a candle they may not have. Remember, this is true 400 years ago too.
Right.
Right. So, okay, let's now get into the nitty gritty. So this is our question. is the mitzvah to have a house without chametz, or is the mitzvah to get rid of chametz? My nafkamina, bless you, my nafkamina is the Torah says tashbisu. This is a mitzvah saseh. Can I fulfill this mitzvah saseh by doing nothing? Why nothing? Because I know I didn't take chametz into this place. Right? So you know that's the expression of the Shulchan Aruch. You only have to check, that's the first mission in the Masechta. You only have to check a place where chametz was brought in. And if you know that chametz wasn't brought into this place, you don't have to bring chametz there to check. Now, what about the minhag of putting out 10 pieces, right? So as you recall from Daf Tes, Daf Yud, Yud Aleph, remember, make sure that at least one person in the house keeps a record of where those 10 pieces are. You don't want to put out 10 and end up with 9, or worse, end up with 11. Right. But also very important, says the Ramah, the mitzvah is not called mitzias chametz. The mitzvah is called bedikas chametz. So if all you do is check for these 10 pieces and then goodbye, then that could be a bracha levatola. There's no mitzvah to put out chametz so you can find it. Right. So I mean, I know it was always such an enjoyable event for our kids that they, you know, whoever we invariably have one or two of them here, you know, at the time for Pesach, they still love doing it. And you know, you take the feather, you take the wooden spoon, and then you have the flashlight, and someone's keeping record, and it's like a family affair. And you know, we still have contests who can find the most pieces, and right. So anyway. But just to put out those 10 is that could be a bracha levatola, especially since it says in Tanakh that Hashem is going to look for the tribes with a candle, right? So putting out 10 pieces, looking for them, it's sort of like a hint to finding the 10 lost tribes. Some families put the name of the tribes, except Yehuda and Binyamin, on those 10 pieces. We don't have that minhag, but some families do. Well, I found Shimon. I found God. I found, you know, yeah. Right? So it's a cute thing. You know what?
I found God.
Yeah, I found God in the living room. So, all right. You know, that's the, everyone has the different things. All right. So let's agree that right for now, that the mitzvah of Tashbisu looks like a mitzvah kiyumis. You don't have to buy chametz to put out so that you can get the mitzvah of Tashbisu Somi Batechem. All right? So the Minchas Chinuch compares... Okay. So the Minchas Chinuch compares the mitzvah of Tashbisu, because there's also a mitzvah not to have chametz, right, of course, to the mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo saseh of Shabbos and Yontif. What do I mean? The Torah says that it should be a Shabbos Shabboson, right, which means that it's a mitzvah saseh to rest on Shabbos. And what does rest on Shabbos mean? It means refrain from doing the lamites melachos, which is, of course, a lo saseh, right? So the lo saseh is lo tasu kol melacha. And in observing the lo saseh of Shabbos, I am observing the aseh of Shabbos. And if I work on Shabbos, if I perform melachos on Shabbos, I not only am violating the lo saseh, I am failing to observe the positive commandments of Shabbos. Now, I think I mentioned this last week, that there are some mitzvahs in the Torah that actually say, let's say tefillin would not be an example. There's no mitzvah that says, don't not wear tefillin, right? There's no mitzvah in the Torah that says, don't not eat matzah, right? If I refrain from shaking lulav and esrog, I missed out on the mitzvah saseh. There's no mitzvah, don't not shake lulav and esrog. But there is a mitzvah, don't not leave peah. You get it? Mm-hmm. It says, leave a corner of your field for the poor. And then it says, lo sechale pa'as sodcha b'kutzracha v'leket kitzircha lo selakeit. Leave the leket for the poor, don't collect it. Leave the shikcha for the poor, don't collect it. Okay? So some mitzvahs are mitzvahs asay and the mitzvahs lo asay simultaneously, right? So that is that's how we have the asay and lo asay. Now, if I perform if I do malacha on Shabbos, of course I'm going. There's a punishment for that. There's an onish. What happens if I do not perform tashbisu, and I have chametz in my house during Pesach? Should I get malchus for that?
Well, that's bal yirai bal yimatzeh. Unless you're like, I mean, you could do bittel, I guess, but that's bal yirai bal yimatzeh.
I didn't do bittel. I owned the chametz, and it's there in my house.
But there's a low sasek for that.
Right?
Don't leave it over.
Yeah, so do I get malchus or not?
No, because I think somebody, maybe like the rabbi or something, makes something that they beat all the hametz of all the Jews in the community.
Okay.
It's also a last name on my side.
So. Right, okay. Camille, you're right also. The rabbi does say that, says leave the chol, you know, but I don't have the right to babato your hametz, though. So we just say that the rabbi teaches everybody what they should do, but I can't babato your hametz. But what Aaron said is that
your hametz?
I'm sorry.
If you know, my hametz is your hametz. If you're using,
not exactly, because then I'll be over for your hametz. But what Aaron just said is that not only is the lav shem b'maisa, but I mentioned I think 2 weeks ago, three different reasons why you might not get malchus. One, it's a lav shem b'maisa. I didn't do anything to keep owning this chametz. It just was in my possession 2 days before Pesach. It was in my possession the day before Pesach, before Chatzos. It was in my possession the day before Pesach after Chatzos. The Rambam paskins that you already violate the lo saseh of owning chametz at midday when the Korban Pesach can already be brought. The lo saseh is lo sishchat al chametz dam zivchi, right? Or ach. Ach tashbisu so'or mibotechem. Ach, it comes to cut the day in half from the time that you can bring the korban Pesach.
It's lav hanitak la'aseh because
that's the second one. Absolutely, the Minchas Chinuch says this now. Yeah, right. Early on, he says it's also a lav hanitak la'aseh. It's a lav that's given to fixing. If I take the eggs without sending away the mother bird, I don't get malchus for that because it's fixable. I'll put the eggs back and then send away the mother bird. If I divorce the woman, I'm not supposed to divorce. Remember the two women, Onus Mufate and Motzi Shemra. And if I divorce that woman, so if I'm a Kohen, so I get Malchus right away because I'm always in a lav anitak, but this is, I can't fix this one because I'm a Kohen and I can't marry her. I'm going to get Malchus if I marry her, if I get Malchus if I don't. So I can't fix it. So the Malchus kicks in, right? There's a third issue here called Hasra Asafik.
What's the nitak here, though? How do you fix this?
You can't get Hasra, right?
And you fix it, what do you mean, by Tashbisu or by the Kohen?
In other words, if you get rid of it, that fixes it? That's the point?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay.
Hasra Asafik always fits in with the Lav HaNitak.
Right.
There's really no good way to make a Hasra for someone who took the mother bird took the eggs already without chasing away the mother bird. There's really no clear hasra. The Gemara in Makos goes through all the seven or eight different types of hasras you can make, and it slugs up each one to say that's not the hasra that's necessary in order to get Malchus. So that is indeed the way Tosfos looks at this, but I want to look at the Rambam for a moment. And then I want to make sure we close our discussion on this. Is that Tashbisu is standing as a mitzvah kiyumis if you happen to have chametz. So let's maybe just read that in the beginning of the chinuch. Does everybody have the three pages I sent out?
Yeah. What daf in the chinuch are you on?
It's the very beginning. Mitzvah test. Very beginning.
Yep, got it.
Lasir kol chametz. Mevuah b'Rambam perek beis mechametz umatzah. V'hinei b'inyonim elu ha'erichu ha'rishonim b'achronim. Okay, he says, what can I add to what's already been written? V'hinei l'chora, second little paragraph there. V'hinei l'chora yesh safek im ha'mitzvah sasehi sheyehei ha'chametz mushbas. If the positive commandment is to make sure that chametz is
gone,
rested, it's gone, right? V'im yesh lo chametz chutz Masha Overa Losase the Bal Yeroa Bal Yamatse Over Od Al Haase. And if he didn't get rid of Chametz, he not only violates the Losase, he has also still violated the Ase. Vim Ein Lo Chametz, Ein Yo Over Balav, Vagamat Mitzvah Sase Mekayim, Beshev Al Tase. And if he has no Chametz, he never had Chametz, he didn't own Chametz. The whole year he didn't own Chametz. Right? So he's on a chametz-free diet, gluten-free diet. So he doesn't have to. He doesn't have to go and get. So I found this fascinating. I don't know. Did I share this with you last week? I found this unbelievable minchas osher. It's a slight digression, but it fits. It fits in. It's a gemara in the Maseches Avodah Zarah. I think it's Daf Chaf Zayin that gives a town where there's a boy that needs to be circumcised. And there are three possibilities for to give him this circumcision. One is a Gentile doctor, totally not Jewish. One is a kuti. A kuti is a like a tzaduki, a Jew, but he doesn't follow the oral traditions. And the third one is a from Jewish woman. A from Jewish woman. So who is best suited to give this child the bris? So, full disclosure, it's the woman, halacha will say.
Spoiler alert. Right.
And it's the reason why the Minchas Asher says it's in this week's parasha.
Sipara.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sipara. Right. Are you familiar with the Minchas Asher? That's Rav Asher Weiss, who became very famous now in COVID. He's like the COVID posek in Israel. He's like what Rav Schechter is to our community. He's really, and he's accepted in the Haredi community also. So, and he's a young guy. He's like he's probably in his early 70s, maybe late 60s. That's pretty young to be a gadol in Israel. Right. So usually have to be over 95. Anyway, I've been to his house a number of times, and Joel goes up there all the time. He lives in remote. And
is he affiliated with a yeshiva or something, or he just writes?
Yeah, he has his own yeshiva in remote.
Okay.
Right near the remote mall.
Okay.
So he has a sefer called the Minchas Osher, and it's like halachic sugyas that are related to the parsha. So in Shmos, he has a question of women doing bris milah. So the problem is that there's a gemara that says himol yimol lochem kol zachar, and the gemara makes a drash that himol yimol means the only one who can give a bris
is the one who needs a bris.
Is one who needs a bris or has a bris, right? So that excludes women. That famous osovlo osa. We're not talking about obligation. I know a woman is obviously not obligated in bris, and she's not obligated to. She wouldn't be sinning if she didn't take her son to a bris, right? The father would be sinning if he didn't make sure his son had a bris. The mother would not be. Of course, if a mother or a father dies or the father is incapacitated, of course she's going to call a moel and take care of things. But I'm just saying that if there's no such opportunity, the woman is not sinning, the man would be. So the Minchas Asher suggests an amazing svara. He says that the reason why the Gemara concludes that a woman is the best choice of these three is because she is already circumcised. What do we mean by that? Since she doesn't need a bris, she's not in this parsha. Right, she's not excluded because he mol yimol. You know what I'm saying? She's born circumcised. She's born gemalt, as far as this halacha is concerned. Mm-hmm. Right, she's not disqualified because she doesn't have a bris. The Gentile doctor is, but she's not. Okay, the Gentile doctor is even if he is circumcised. By the way,
because he's not in the parsha.
Not in the parsha. He's not commanded. You get it?
Right.
You can train a Gentile to perfectly do shechita, but he's not in the parsha of his avachta, right? So a Gentile who takes the sharpest knife in the world and does the best shechita on earth is still makes apostle shechita, just like, by the way, he would make apostle sefer Torah, even though he has perfect calligraphy, right? So as far as it's in this week's parsha, but do you see how this touches upon our issue here? Is that we have the mitzvah to get rid of the chametz, but if you don't have chametz, of course it's not a mitzvah.
Right.
Okay. She's born not needing to get rid of her chametz. You know what I'm saying? Or she doesn't have a foreskin to cut off. So that is the that's the issue on ase and los ase. Now the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah that owning chametz on Pesach, right, does not get malchus, but if someone purchases chametz during Pesach, he does get malchus. Aaron, from what you said before, why?
Because that's a kumvase.
It's kumvase. He did something positive. He didn't do it's not a shein b'maase.
Right. Okay?
So if he purchases chametz on Pesach, so he gets malchus for that. Now it's an interesting side note to this. The Chinuch just touches upon it and says this is not the place to discuss it. But an interesting side note is that remember the chametz shares this aspect with a bor b'shus harabim, is that you can't really acquire land in the public domain by digging a pit there. It doesn't become yours per se, but it becomes yours just enough to.
Right. Liability attaches to you.
Right.
What if somebody gives you chametz on Pesach?
If you acquire it, then your question is very germane. And who hasn't had this once in the last years where a box of high-end cookies comes to you from a friend or, just in the middle of Chol HaMoed, this wonderful box of this, and it has a chavke on it, and it has, it's this big crumb cake, and right? and you can't wait to have it, but it arrived on Pesach, so your chotzer or something may have acquired it, and what do I do with this? The question is not can I eat it? No one wants to eat this thing.
Right.
Can I give it to my mailman? Can I give it to my doorman?
Right.
Right. So that's the question in this. So it's can you say no? I don't want to acquire this. No. I mean, it's not mine. I never.
Right. I don't want to acquire it till after Yontif. I don't accept. I don't accept it until
after Yontif. Charles.
Yes, I have a funny question. If someone steals chametz on Pesach, can he be both liable for malchus and the financial penalty, because it's two different things, even though it's one act, which you're not supposed to be able to punish for?
So you're right that someone who steals chametz from another Jew on Pesach is if he makes an act of acquisition. But this, your question is very much germane to where I was going with this. Chametz cannot be owned by a Jew on Pesach, except to be owning it enough, like the pit in the public sphere, to be violating by Roy by Matzah. No, it has no other value to you whatsoever. L'may nafkamina, what's the benchmark in Shas for if something has value?
You can do kiddushin with it.
Correct, exactly. Can you mekadesh with this?
Yeah.
Not only a woman, but can you make it hektish?
We don't paskin this way, but there is an opinion I recall that Kimle Bidarabamine applies for Kares. So like Charles's question, if you were to eat stolen chametz on Pesach, then according to that opinion, because you'd be high of Kares, you wouldn't be.
Aaron, the eating would have to take place where you acquire it the moment you eat it. You have to bend over and pick it up. Then the Gneva and the Kares come simultaneously. But as we know from Hilchos Shabbos, if you steal someone's wallet indoors and then walk outdoors with it and carry it for Amos, you are chayav for Gneva and Skila because the Gneva came first.
They have to come in exactly. So.
Oh, yeah.
The eating has to be the act of Gneva. You can't
otherwise.
And then eat it because the taking is the Gneva and the eating it is.
Yeah, otherwise someone who's chayav Gneva, but then he happens to murder somebody, so. That's chaos.
If you eat it, if you haven't otherwise, acquired it, the eating is ipso facto by definition.
Right. And Aaron's question of what's known as kim lebe deraba mine, that if the same crime is punishable with two punishments, we only give more serious punishment. So if the same crime carries a punishment of of a monetary fine and a death penalty. We don't fine them the monetary fine. That's only when those two come mamash simultaneously. In the Daftalah of Masechet Shabbos, there's a discussion on that.
But get it. If someone gives it to you, can you say, I don't accept, it's hefker until, you know, until later.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, you tell the doorman, listen, you know, I don't want this. Especially, you know, the
building. No, but it's hefker. It's in your home, but it's hefker. And then after yontif, you can make it not hefker, and, you know, then use it.
Problem, because there's something called the kinyan chotzer. But all right, there's lumdus in this because
I heard a story. I forget who it was about, but there was a rav that invited someone for a seder who was not observant. He was just, you know, very estranged from Judaism, just beginning to come back. And they actually brought him to the front door to the seder. They brought him a cake, and he told his son or something. He didn't want to embarrass them, and he told his son, you know, take the cake immediately, walk it through the kitchen to the back, you know, take it out of the house immediately and put it in the garbage. But you know, he dealt with it very sensitively, but this situation came up.
I actually had a situation a few years ago where cousins of Vivian's were, you know, distantly affiliated. It happens they were in New York over Pesach, and they came up to the house to visit, and they had a little baby, and they wanted to bring in food to the house to feed the baby, and didn't have. I assume the food was kosher, but it didn't have, you know, I had no idea whether it was kosher pressed or not. So I actually went outside. I said, you know what, let's go outside. I didn't know what to do. I said, you know what, it's a beautiful day outside. Let's all go outside and schmooze on the, you know, in the backyard.
It's probably the right thing to do. But you can also rely on the fact that to violate Bali Roy by Matze, it has to be, this is like in the daf the last few days, this past Sunday. In order to violate by Rabbi Matze, it has to be a chametz, real chametz. It wouldn't violate if it was kidneys, but you didn't know. Yeah. By the way, it doesn't have to be kedais b'chadei achilas pras. Even a mashu is violates by Rabbi Matze. There's no shear for by Rabbi Matze.
But don't you have to have das to be kmonet? In other words, if somebody brings it in and you actively do not want it.
Yes. Yeah. Your chutzah does not acquire that kind of stuff. But you probably did the right thing. But your chotzer, if it's meant for you, it has your name on it, it was mailed to you, you know, and then it's put into your house.
It's just instinct. It had nothing to do with halal. I just didn't feel right.
What if you just put it away in the chametz cupboard, let's say?
So once that thing is sold, you can't add to that thing. And once Pesach starts, you can't.
You have to destroy it.
You don't have access to it, so... So, but if you haven't acquired it, so then, you know, then you give it to just say, no, please don't take this here. Just do whatever you want with it, but don't put it here. Well, you know, if you can do that before it gets into your house. Okay. So, but Aaron was right before when he said that, the benchmark of whether this thing has value is if you can say harayat mekudeshesli with this five boxes and Nabisco cookies, das Moshe of Israel. All right, so what's interesting, and just another side note, is that chametz does not, however, grab onto its value. It's called in the Hebrew tofes domim. If I sell chametz on Pesach against the law, let's say I have $1,000 worth of chametz, and I barter it with someone for a ring, and I give that ring to a woman and say, I read it mekudeshesli, that is mekudeshes, because chametz does not extend to the thing it was sold for.
Proceeds, right. It doesn't trace the proceeds.
As opposed to three things do. Avodah Zarah, Hekdesh, and the third one is sort of a wild card, Shemitah fruit. Shemitah fruit. If you sell Shemitah fruit against the law, you're not allowed to sell Shemitah fruits in the Shemitah year. If you sell Shemitah fruits, or you barter, let's say, a Shemitah peach for a piece of herring, that herring now has Kedusha Shvias attached to it. L'mayin afkamina, you can't waste it, right? You shouldn't sell that thing now. It becomes like it has a beer date. It has the beer date of the fruit that you bartered it for. I mean, it has Shemitah rules attached to it. Okay, so even if it's not a Shemitah product per se, as long as it's food, it wouldn't apply if you bartered a Shemitah peach for a pen. No. If it's bartered for food, the Shemitah rules project to that food. And by the way, and it continues, right?
Oh, really, more than one step?
It keeps. Yeah, the peach will always remain a Shemitah product, but the herring, if the herring is then bartered for an avocado, now the avocado, even if it wasn't a Shemitah avocado, now becomes.
And the herring, does it retain the Shemitah product?
And the herring is now off. Nice. Okay. But the first and the last one remains as it is. Okay. But with Avodah Zarah, and Hekdesh, straight through the line becomes straight through. This is why when they were burning all those wigs, remember about 20 years ago?
Yeah.
Remember they were burning the wigs in Borough Park because the Indian women were making Tikrovis Avodah Zarah before they cut their hair. Mm-hmm. Everyone remember this case?
Yeah.
So if you couldn't find an excuse for burning the wigs, to not burn the wigs, then that's a whole bunch of additional hurt there. All the shekelmachers, whatever they used that money that they got for the shekelach, whatever they bought with that money is now tikruvus avodah zara. So you've got to burn the car they bought, and it's all unless you can apply a sfexfeka. But whatever they bought with the money that the proceeds for those wigs is a big problem. So anyway, when it comes to chametz, though, it does not hold on to its money. So the Rambam paskins in Hilchos Chametz Umatzah in Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel that if you purchase chametz during Pesach, you do get malchus. Okay, but Tosfos in Daf Tzadik Hei says you don't get malchus. Because of what Walter said, because it's a lav hanita klase. It is still given to be fixed if you bought the chametz during Pesach. Get rid of it now, right? Okay, this rule is also a machlokas, the Rambam and Tosfos, regarding the mother bird being chased away. But that's really where the Gemara establishes this rule, okay? That, but it's like if you do malacha on yontif, which is kiveyochol alav hanita klase, which is absurd. But anytime I do a malacha on yontif, yeah, I can fix it. Stop doing the malacha, right? and I'll be fulfilling tashbisu. Let me stop mowing the lawn, and now I'm going to start. From the minute I stop mowing the lawn, I'm going to start my tashbisu of yonder, right? So,
like lo tignov, if you steal something and you repay it back, is that lase?
Yeah.
Stealing
does not get malchus. Yeah, because it's fixable.
Isn't that's the classic case of lavani taglase is stealing, right? Isn't it?
Yeah. Lo tigzol the heshivas exela.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Okay, so now the time for Tashbisu is Erev Pesach between the fourth and the fifth hour. That can be impractical for people who are traveling. It can be impractical for people who have to be at work during that time. So this is totally given to Shlichus. We have the boxes in Shul. Tie up your chametz that you want us to burn for you. And say your kol chamira v'chamira, right? The Gemara says, the first Rashi in Tosfos, the first machlokas Rashi in Tosfos in Maseches Psachim is, why do we have to do a bedikas chametz? Right. So Rashi says, shema yimtza gluska yafe. I'm sorry, the opposite. Tosfos says that. Rashi says, shelo ya'avor al ba'yiroa ba'yamatzei. So you don't violate owning chametz. Tosfos says shema yimtza gluski yafet. Not because of Bali Rabbi Matze. The Bittel takes care of that.
You might find something you don't want to be mivata.
Right. So this has to do with there is a minhag not to sell open bags of boxes of cereal or an open box of crackers. They will sell chametz be'en. The original Tosefta that teaches that we do mechiras chametz was on beer, which is chametz be'en, which is real chametz. some people don't will only sell a taruvas chametz. They will not sell a pretzels, Wheaties. They will not sell Tam Tams or crackers.
I know people that won't sell whiskey.
They won't even sell whiskey. They get rid of all their whiskey.
They don't have that much
of a thing.
Make sure to drink on Pesach.
Yeah, they will not sell it on Pesach.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, can you come? Oh, yes, I'll get you invited for before Pesach.
I know there's some people on the show when I sell their chametz and I ask them for their approximate value and they say, the whiskey is $45,000.
Exactly. Everything else is $50.
So there's some people on the show who have some real like collectors fake whiskeys. So what's the nafkamina is that they will not sell anything where you can possibly violate Pesach by eating. You see, if you sell back a can of sardines without hashkacha, peanut butter without hashkacha, jelly without hashkacha, you know what I'm saying? Well, with the things we mostly sell, canned corn, kidneys for sure, doesn't have chametz in it. So if you sell those things and you inadvertently look for a midnight snack and open up a closet that has, from what you sold, you could never violate Pesach by eating taruvas chametz because you would have to eat 42 cans of tuna fish in 5 minutes to get a kezias of chametz. But if you start eating Tam Tam crackers, if you start eating Kit Kats, if you start eating, you know what I'm saying? You start eating some of those things, you might actually in 5 minutes taka eat a kezias. Right? So they will not sell something that could possibly violate Pesach by eating it. Okay. All right, so what's the nafkamina between an open box of cereal and a closed box of cereal?
If it's closed, you'll remember.
Right. You'll remember not to eat it.
Right. If it's closed, by the time you get it open, you're like, oh my God, what am I doing? You know, I'm going for a midnight snack and I wanna get, I'm so hungry and you forget that sometimes happens on a fast day. You know, you start because they're looking for something to eat. What am I doing? It's a fast day today. So by the time you get that thing open, you'll remember. Right? It sounds like a Tosfos in the beginning of Beitza that where the Gemara says that if you have you're walking by a tree and there's fruit at the bottom of the tree that fell before Yontif or Shabbos, you can't eat that fruit if it's right at the bottom of the tree, because if you eat the fruit, you may come to pick another fruit. Right? If it fell on Shabbos or Yontif, then it's also because of Muktzah. But and the same is if you have fruit like a lot of grapes in a bowl. And the grapes oozed out juice. You can't eat that juice because if you eat it, then you may come to squeeze more juice and violate schita. So we have these mitzvahs that you shouldn't do because you may come to violate another malacha. So Tosfos asks this question. He says, then why are we allowed to have a Gentile, if a Gentile opens up a light and he starts reading something, then we're allowed to use the light also? Right? Remember the Gemara at the end of Kol Kisvei, where Shmuel was sitting in a very dimly lit room, and he was trying to read something. A Gentile that knew him saw that he was squinting to read, and he put on a light, and Shmuel said, oh, rats, now I have to leave here. I was comfortable. So then when he saw the Gentile return and starting to read a contract, so he says, oh, adaita denafshe ka'ovid. He did it for himself. So now Shmuel went back in and started reading with the better light. So Tosfos asks, on that Gemara, why don't we say that you shouldn't use such a light because you may come to light your own? If Shmuel might come and light his own light if he uses the Gentile's light. So Tosfos gives an answer. No, because by the time you would have to make the whole big yeshef of opening up a light, you have to add the fuel and you have to put the proper pyre and you have to, it's not so simple. So by the time you do all those things, you'll remember that it's Shabbos. We're worried about people just inadvertently doing something that ends up being a violation of Shabbos. So the answer that Tosfos gives doesn't seem to apply today, where all you have to do is flick a switch.
Right.
Right? So based on this, I saw this in the Tshuvas Be'er Moshe. It's Moshe Stern. It's called the Be'er Moshe. And he says that That's why if you have a place where you recognize yourself, I mean, because you've done it on other Friday nights, maybe Chas v'Shalom, or maybe it happens often during the week even, is that you see that you close the light and you forgot that it's Shabbos. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't even realize it. You wake up in the morning and say, hey, why is the bathroom light off? Right. I wanted to read the paper in here. Right. So why is the bathroom light off? So you, and then you remember that you had a lot of tea Friday night and you went to the bathroom in the middle of the night. You remember doing, but you don't even remember closing the light. Right. So the Bear Moshe says that light should have a piece of tape on across it or some kind of magnet across it. Now they make it that says Shabbos Yontif with a little line through it, you know, and so you might have to cover that. The nafkamina is that if you did shut that light, do you have to have kapara next Yom Kippur for that?
I was like misasek, no?
Yeah, Aaron is correct. Misasek does not need kapara. Ones rachmana patre. But in light of this Tosfos, if it's a very common misasek, in other words, it's a misasek that's so alul, it's very common, then you have to do something to obviate the misasek and cover it.
Right. You only get that excuse once.
Right. So the next Yom Kippur, you don't have to feel a bit, oh, what did I do? I can't believe it. I opened the light. I closed the light. All right. Okay. Chevra, I keep saying it every 8:58 on Wednesday night. I say it's mamish the fastest hour. And thank you for listening. And
I heard on a podcast that the whole Mechiras Chametz thing really got going in Eastern Europe. When the Jewish community grew in Eastern Europe, the liquor trade, the grain in the Kingdom of Poland, the Jews became like the tavern keepers for the Polish magnates, and they sort of got into the vodka or whiskey business in a big way for the first time in history. And a lot of the learning around Mechiras Chametz really dates from that era.
But this is give me the date, huh? I can give you that, 1840, the first Mechiras Chametz form dates only to 1840.
Right, really? The first time they couldn't finish up the Chametz because it was like big inventory.
Yeah.
Because the
Christians didn't let the Jews join the guilds. They couldn't own land. But they not only allowed them, they encouraged them to become tavern owners and barkeepers because they, good Christians, that, you know, that was beneath them to do that. Right.
Or the Christians would drink up all the profits.
Yeah,
the Gentiles would drink up all the profits. So they felt better that the Jew, the nobleman had the monopoly, but the Jew ran it for him.
And it always ended up being with anti-Semitic overtones to it. But yeah, the Jews generally did not drink so much, but they were the ones supplying it. Right. Yeah. Right.
So 1840s is when it takes?
1840 is what I'm told. I saw a facsimile of it once. Mm. It was sold in one of these auctions. That's the oldest form that they put out.
Wow.
I'm sure the people sold it before then. But it was, look, remember, you didn't really have Pesach tikka pots and pans. You know, you just kashered whatever you had. And then you got rid of all your food. Who had food?
Right.
Who stored food? You know, you didn't have refrigeration, of course, but
right.
Who stored food?
Right.
Right? And vermin would come in and eat whatever you store for a long time. I mean, when animals are going to, we stored food. All right, Chevra, have a great week.
Thank you.